Gossip at the Corpse Cart contains graphic and explicit content that may not be suitable for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, and welcome back to Gossip at the Corpse Cart, where we, the Wine and Crime Gals, talk about some shit you would have seen in your newsfeed, some of the worst shit you've ever done, and also some gross and creepy shit, some obituary shit from me. So for this best of episode, we wanted to share what we thought was kind of a prevalent thread throughout a lot of GAC episodes, and that is work-related incidents, so like office crushes and romances that maybe went horribly wrong or were found out about in not a great way, really horrible job interviews, questionable baked goods in the break room, etc. So apparently your workplace inspires nightmares, horrible things, very embarrassing moments. And that's okay. So let's throw it to Amanda. Amanda, why don't you take us through your beautiful array of great workplace headlines from over the years?
Okay, we're going to go into the way, way back machine with some of these GAC throwbacks. And one of them even has a little update at the end. So stay tuned. Our first throwback is from all the way back in April of 2020, GAC number 16. And this is a tale of really my worst nightmare, but it's an arrest after someone was caught sucking on not chili dogs. I have a couple more. This next one is a little sequel to a previous article sent in from Cheyenne Carey and Kelsey Hammerland and a couple of others. If we recall the Florida breaking and entering toe licker.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
From last month.
Haunts my dreams. So, yeah, well, sure do.
Just know that you're not safe at home, and you're not safe if you have to go to the hospital.
Or an Anytime Fitness.
Especially in Florida.
Or a Greyhound bus.
Yeah, or a Greyhound bus. Hospital worker arrested after sucking on patient's toes. Yeah. I know. It's bad.
Oh, no.
A hospital worker was arrested after authorities say a patient caught him sucking on their toes late Monday night. France Belderin, 23, of Lee County, Florida, is facing a charge of battery on a person over the age of 65. That is elder abuse. It's also just abuse. Stay away from my toes. I know. I'm so grossed out. The stunned patient at Gulf Coast Hospital in Fort Myers told police they initially thought Belderin was checking their feet for swelling before
with
noticing something wet between their toes around 11 p.m. I'm so grossed out. When the patient looked up, they saw Belderin on his knees with his head bent over their foot.
Why, sir?
Yeah, I don't know. And police noted in the report that Belderin had been assigned to babysit the patient's roommate, who the hospital labeled as a flight risk. So he, like, had to be there. He was taken into custody after the patient told another nurse about what had happened. Quote, I dropped my phone under the bed, and as I'm trying to get my phone, she kicks, Belderin said in an interview after posting bond.
Were you frightened?
Right. I can't even. He was reportedly fired from his position at the hospital, and he is awaiting potential criminal charges.
Look, do whatever you want to do with whoever's
in the bedroom with
feet.
A consenting partner.
Yeah, with consent. There are other freakadeeks out there who want you to suck on their toes, but
here
not
for it.
Unsuspecting elderly folks, okay?
And I'm not wearing socks right now, and I'm just getting, like, full body chills that, like, something under my desk is going to lick my toes now. I hate it.
This is worse than murder.
It's so much worse. All right, we've got another little throwback for you from February of 2021. All right, next article headline isn't funny, but it's just all around a win, and we all, I think, need a win. At this juncture?
Sure do.
So the headline reads, New Zealand sex worker wins six-figure sexual harassment payout.
Yes.
Yep. A New Zealand sex worker has won a six-figure payout as part of a settlement after filing a sexual harassment complaint against a business owner, according to the country's Human Rights Commission. The settlement was an important reminder that all workers, regardless of the type of work they did, have the right to freedom from sexual harassment in the workplace, which is a quote from Michael Timmins, director of the Office of Human Rights Proceedings. Quote, we encourage all business owners and employers to ensure that they understand and respect those rights. The commission said the settlement was intended to compensate the woman who was represented by Timmins' office for emotional harm and lost earnings. Her identity and all other details in the case remained confidential, which is smart. The woman's case was filed with the Human Rights Review Tribunal, which had earlier ruled that sex workers were protected against sexual harassment under the Human Rights Act. Mm-hmm. Quote, context is everything. Even in a brothel, language with a sexual dimension can be used inappropriately in suggestive, oppressive, or abusive circumstances, the tribunal said. Mm-hmm. Quote, it follows that it is not possible to ask whether a reasonable sex worker, quote unquote, would find the behavior unwelcome or offensive. If in a brothel, language or behavior of a sexual nature could never be considered unwelcome or offensive, sex workers would be denied the protection of the act. Mm-hmm. So I just thought that that was awesome. Somebody sent that along and it's like, fucking, it can be done.
Yeah. Well, New Zealand has decriminalized sex work. Mm-hmm. So that is why this individual, you know,
has
is able
protection.
To claim the rights. Yeah, exactly, that they have, which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody else should get on board. And our next clip from GAC 28 is from April of 2021. We're going in sequential order, babes. Here, this next one is horrific. And on my list of greatest fears, because I cannot and will not ever say no to a donut, let alone question what is on or around that donut.
Where it came from. Did somebody defile a donut?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
The headline reads, office worker brought donuts glazed with his own semen to his boss's farewell party.
Sir.
Yeah. Ew. Sir, your glaze.
Just leave
gentleman's glaze.
Oh, Krispy's cream.
Yeah. Like, there's no way that someone you don't want or necessarily want to target isn't going to accidentally eat one of those nuts.
Yeah.
These nuts.
Is not okay. That is food tampering.
Oh, absolutely. This is an arrestable offense. An office worker from Charlotte, North Carolina, was charged with food tampering after an analysis found his own semen in the glaze.
Oh.
Adam Richardson, 37, allegedly purchased some plain donuts and took them home where he mixed icing sugar with his semen and glazed the... I'm sorry. That was a genuine gag. I'm sorry. And glazed the donuts. I chose this and I still am upset with the mixture. Employees, and it's really...
Oh my God. All of our listeners who have, like, was it misophonia? Well, they probably haven't hung in this long because we do this sound too often.
I'm sorry. I had to scroll, but I did put a picture on the drive. It's not of the actual donuts, but it is of glazed donuts. And the glaze is so drippy and it keeps making me gag. So I had to scroll down because I cannot look at it.
It's just translucent enough.
So try that. Okay. I'm fine. Employees at the farewell party who ate the donuts reported something unusual. About the flavor.
It's salty. Like the red Solo cup. It's
noting
like my story
that
with
there
the red
was
Solo
a
cup.
Salty oh. aftertaste.
It tastes like those trees that bloom in spring. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, but we were in LA and I was like, why does the whole town smell like cum?
Yeah.
After seeing the boss eat a donut and complimenting him on the taste.
No!
Employees said Richardson burst into uncontrolled laughter. You guys, there is just my whole throat is like full of like spit because I keep gagging.
Let's not talk about full throats right now.
No. Oh, God.
Don't swallow it.
Quote, we figured then that he'd spiked the donuts with something because there's a bit of bad blood in the past between the pair, said one employee.
Why would you ever, ever let the employee who is quitting bring the food to the
goodbye party? Well, the employee's not quitting. The boss is leaving.
Oh.
Well, I'm sure the employee's fired now, but.
Oh, all right. Well, this guy's a fucking.
But we had no idea it was his own semen. After Richardson was arrested, thank God, he said that he wanted to get revenge for the 12 years of torment by his boss and coworkers. Okay, so he was targeting all of them.
How'd they find out that it was jizz?
I think it tasted weird, and somebody was like, I know what cum tastes like, and then they got it tested, and it was positive.
Oh, they did
for like,
get it tested?
Yeah.
This guy is, like, actually going to have a jail sentence.
Oh, the next sentence is, he is now facing a jail sentence. Oh. This was just one of his many semen-based recipes, and after he gets out of prison, he would like to continue his career in avant-garde cooking and molecular gastronomy.
Ew!
All right, this guy is a monster. I don't care how shitty your boss was. This isn't okay.
Nope. You could quit.
Yeah.
You could just quit.
Yeah.
You could quit in a very dickish, flouncy way that doesn't involve bodily fluids.
Blech. Okay.
I draw the line.
Been drawn.
It's a special kind of like fucked upness to repeatedly use your semen as a prank.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have sympathized more with murderers that we have discussed on this
absolutely.
Show.
Yeah.
Good absolutely. For her.
Absolutely. Good for her. Let's have another look at a GAC headline from GAC 39, March 2022. All right. I will cleanse your palates with my last one. This is the douche of the month winner. Woo. And many, many, many people sent and tweeted and DM'd this. So I had to include it. A museum guard draws eyes on a pricey painting due to boredom.
Yes, I saw this.
There's a picture of it on the drive. It's amazing. I kind of like the eyes. A valuable avant-garde painting of artist Anna Leporsaika's three figures painting valued roughly at $1 million was vandalized by a bored security guard who was on his first and obviously last day at work.
Yes, it was his first day. He couldn't handle the boredom.
Sir.
Original and with eyes.
I know. I love the side by side. The 90-year-old painting was on exhibit at the Yeltsin Center in Yekaterinburg. And was on loan from Moscow State Tretiakov Gallery, Russia.
Okay.
Nailed it.
No, I'm not. As part of an exhibit titled The World as Non-Objectivity, The Birth of a New Art. Okay, cool. The original painting had three figures with blank faces, but the bored security guard drew two pairs of eyes on the painting with a ballpoint pen.
A
ballpoint pen, like a Bic.
Yeah.
The painting was sent to the gallery. I'm not going to try to pronounce this again. A day after the incident and inspected by a restorer. The restorer stated that the damage could be repaired without permanently damaging the artwork and that it would cost approximately $32,000, which is an acceptable amount compared to the painting's $972,000.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure the insurance company is like
that's the insurance value is like just under $1 million. So they're gonna just take care of it.
In the original without eyes, you kind of can see phantom eyes.
Oh yeah.
He didn't just plop eyes willy-nilly. He he saw the artist's intention
of the hint of eye.
Yep. Yeah.
He was just bored.
Yep. So the unidentified, like unreleased name of this security guard, he's 60 years old. He worked for a private security company and he has been fired. A full investigation was launched by the Russian Ministry of Culture and the guard could face a $534 fine and a 1-year labor sentence.
Oh, God. I mean, that's probably a lot of money in Russia. It's about to be a shit ton of money in Russia really. Because sure the ruble is fucked. So
it's not great. God,
like what? It obviously don't let this man around art anymore.
Yeah.
But like, what else are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it was a shenanigan.
Yeah. Quote, his motives are still unknown, but the administration believes it was some kind of lapse in sanity. Fortunately, the vandal drew with a pen without strong pressure, and therefore the relief of the strokes as a whole was not disturbed. The left figure also had a small crumble of the paint layer up to the underlying layer on the face, she said. But these are like pretty easy, at least for repairs. Art restorers to repair. Yep. So it's being repaired. The guy's been fired. He's probably not going to have a whole lot of fun wherever he's sent.
Oh, God.
To do his labor work. And don't draw on anything in a museum.
Don't. Ever. Don't do it. If you're not sure if it's art.
Yep. Just don't touch.
Err on the side of it's art and don't just touch it.
Don't fucking touch it.
Yep.
All right.
Anyway, go shave your tongues. And those are my headlines.
Amazing.
And one more fun clip. This last one from GAC 45 of September 2022 has a sweet little update.
I feel very seen by this month's batch, especially this first headline out of Pennsylvania that reads, two workers rescued from chocolate vat at Pennsylvania Mars Wrigley plant.
Okay, Willy Wonka.
I know.
Was there like a chocolate milk like banker tube?
I mean, honey, I don't know. I hope so.
No.
This says the two were transported for medical evaluation and the company that makes M&Ms and other candy reported. Oh, so two workers. Mars. Yeah, Mars and Wrigley.
Wow.
So two workers at a Pennsylvania plant where candy is made were rescued from a chocolate tank on Thursday. Jesus Christ.
I could think of worse ways to die.
God. The pair were pulled from a vat of dry chocolate. Okay. So like maybe the flakes before they melt.
Yeah, powdered, maybe.
Yep, maybe. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So Mars Wrigley, the maker of M&Ms, Snickers, Twix, and other confections, said in a statement that the employees were being evaluated. Quote, we can confirm both people have been taken off-site for further evaluation, said a company spokesperson.
And further licking.
Further cleanup with my mouth. We're extremely grateful for the quick work of the first responders. God bless.
Stungs.
It wasn't clear whether the two were injured, but they were hospitalized. So I would assume that they were injured, but made it.
Maybe emotionally.
Maybe. The Elizabethtown Fire Department made the rescue and the Lancaster County Emergency Dispatch was like in charge of leading the rescue team to the Mars factory. And they are both recovering. So that's that.
That's the whole thing.
That's the whole thing. I feel like this is a cover up by Mars Wrigley to keep it intentionally vague. Like
by big chocolate.
Right. By big chocolate. Yes. Yes. It's a fucking conspiracy, man.
It seriously is.
I need to know more. I need some true investigative reporters to go in and find out how they're doing.
Yeah.
Because
the people need to know.
The people
need to know.
We choose
to go to the moon.
We choose to go to the moon. But y'all, sometimes justice is served. So in February of 2023, Mars Wrigley was fined after workers fall into chocolate tank at M&M Mars factory. Let's hear about it. Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania. Federal workplace safety authorities have fined a central Pennsylvania confectionery factory more than $14,500 following an accident in which two workers fell into a vat of chocolate, which like is kind of my dream, but also very dangerous. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration, a.k.a. OSHA, cited Mars Wrigley in the June incident at the Elizabethtown M&M Mars factory, saying the workers were not authorized to work in the tanks and were not trained on the proper safety procedures for the equipment. Officials said two workers employed by an outside contracting firm fell into the partially filled chocolate tank while doing maintenance work, and emergency responders were able to free the pair by cutting a hole in the bottom of the tank. Both were taken to hospitals, one by helicopter, both covered in chocolate.
A company representative told reporters last week that the safety of workers and outside contractors is a top priority for our business. Quote, as always, we appreciate OSHA's collaborative approach to working with us to conduct the after action review. So I hope they get their payout and justice is sometimes quite sweet. As always, if you have any headlines or updates to past headlines that you'd like to share, head to the contact page of our website, wineandcrimepodcast.com, and send them my way. Now let's hear a word from our sponsors.
There is no quick fix, no simple solution for anxiety and depression. It's very complex. Mm-hmm. If you know, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not just finding a new therapist or starting an exercise routine or touching grass. Mm-hmm. Not more or regular meditation or a better diet. Sometimes you need something to just sort of unlock your brain, like flip that switch. Mm-hmm. A new way of thinking about and seeing the world. And maybe that thing is guided ketamine therapy from MindBloom.
Mm-hmm. There is a new tool to improve your mental health, and that is at-home ketamine therapy. MindBloom is the leader in at-home ketamine therapy, having safely helped thousands of people overcome their anxiety and depression. Unlike traditional talk therapy, ketamine works quickly and doesn't have the unpleasant side effects of traditional antidepressants. And in a study of over 1,200 MindBloom clients, 89% reported improvements in their anxiety and depression after only two sessions.
Right now, MindBloom is offering our listeners $100 off your first six-session program when you sign up at mindbloom.com/gals and use promo code GALS. Take the first step and break free from your anxiety and depression with MindBloom. MindBloom.com/gals and use promo code GALS. Have you heard of Dipsy? Probably. Dipsy has all types of oral pleasures to explore, and oral with an A-U, like your ears, not the O-R, like what you were thinking of. But also they have that too, if that's what you're into.
Oh, thank God. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short, sexy audio stories designed by women for everyone. They bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters, so you can discover stories about second chance romances, adventurous vacation flings, hot and heavy hookups, breaking your foot on a hike. Oh, just me? That's just me.
Sexy.
And being rescued by like a sexy lifeguard.
Oh, now we're talking.
I need to write for Dipsy. Radically inclusive, Dipsy has stories for straight and queer listeners, and 56% of stories are voice acted by people of color. And you might recognize some of the celeb voices on this app. And let me tell you, you'll be hearing them like you have never heard them before. I have a personal, undying love, devotion, attraction to ER Fightmaster,
and yeah,
something is unlocked in me when I hear them read those stories.
Serena's Jay Jackson, hello.
I go feral. New content is released every week, so in between listening to your favorite stories again and again, you can always find something new to explore. They also have soothing sleep stories, wellness sessions, and sexy stories you can read. So let Dipsy be your go-to place to spice up your me time, explore your fantasies, relax and unwind, or heat things up with a partner.
For listeners of this show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/gals. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/GALS. One more time, dipsystories.com/gals, and treat your fantasies.
Treat them.
All right. Are you ready for some coven confessions? I know I am. They are always the highlight of my month because y'all in the wine coven are unhinged. And it's pretty amazing to live vicariously through all of you. And I like how what's the worst thing you've ever done has quickly morphed into what is the most embarrassing thing that has ever happened to you. So we have some more best of coven confessions for you. And we've selected the theme of workplace confessions because it just adds a little extra drama to the worst thing you've ever done / the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to you, if it happens in your workplace. So the first one we have is a pretty recent one. It's from August 2023. And before we begin, just a reminder to read those ramen instructions. You might think it's easy to make ramen, but if you're distracted listening to Whining Crime, you could, oh, I don't know, almost burn down your office? Quote, "Hello, I'd like to tell you about the time I almost burned down my office building because I was too distracted by listening to your podcast."
Oh, sorry.
"I hope you guys are having a fantastic day because my day, I'm not really, my back went out, but it's fine, because my day has been nothing but a shit show."
It was rhetorical.
"Let me tell you some other shit about my day. My AC's out, my bag is out."
Okay. So to explain what happened,
I have to say that I listen to your podcast literally every single day that I'm at work, and it's honestly the only reason I haven't lost my mind in that tiny little cubicle around no one, because fucking COVID. So thank you. Anyways, getting to the almost burning down my office building. I work at a mortgage firm, one that shall not be named, and right now they're flip-flopping between being very, very busy and then having nothing to do.
Okay.
Day to day. Okay. This particular day, it started out incredibly busy with hours of phone calls to lawyers and emails back and forth to morons who don't know how to do their jobs. So finally, when I was able to take my break at around 3 p.m., I was tired, hungry, and needed a break, so I plugged in my headphones and put on your podcast to wind down. Now, while I was listening to your podcast, I was planning on having ramen noodles for lunch."
Good call.
"It's one of those things where you put the water in the packet and the spices." Yeah, we know what ramen noodles is. "Because I was so tired, I mindlessly didn't do any of that."
And read all the instructions they left.
Should I read it?
Ramen? Yes.
"I was planning on having ramen noodles for lunch.
Exotic fare.
That is one of those ones where you put water in and the packet things of spices and add them together in this plastic bowl." End quote. "Because I was so tired, I mindlessly didn't do any of that. Instead, just placed the dry noodles in the damn microwave with a metal fucking spoon."
Honey! No!
"Put the microwave on high for 4 minutes.
This chick started the fire.
Babe.
And walked away to a far table in the break room."
Oh, babe. No.
That is arson.
Yeah.
That is what that is.
That sounds soups intentional.
"Before I knew it, there was holy smoke shit covering the whole floor and the microwave was on fire."
Yeah.
"I ran to it and poured the remainder of my iced coffee that I had," parentheses,
"my flammable
basic
iced coffee,"
"which put it out mostly, but not completely. So again, I ran to the sink and continuously kept putting water on the fire, like from the sink, like I'm imagining, like with their hands. And just when I thought it was completely extinguished, the fire alarm went off."
Oh my God.
"I panicked and grabbed my burnt, melted plastic noodles, threw it in a trash bag, and cartoonishly ran down 6 flights of stairs where I proceeded to try to hide the smoking trash bag that was in my hand as people were leaving the building."
Sounds like when my dorm caught on fire.
Ryan started the fire.
"I eventually got down to the main lobby and snuck past the guard who was telling people where to go and ran down to the basement and threw the still smoking trash bag in the dumpster." They almost started a dumpster fire in addition to the microwave fire.
No.
There's been another attack.
There's been a fire attack.
"I quickly ran back up the main lobby and walked out with my coworkers, pretending to be confused and worried with everyone else, as if I wasn't the one who caused the whole mess in the first place. 7 fire trucks came barreling down the street, full geared up firefighters in tow, and run straight up the stairs with masks and everything. 3 exclamation points. Yeah, honey, there was a fucking fire.
Yeah.
4 days go by after that shit show,
And I thought I put all of this behind me and got away with nobody knowing it was me who almost burned the whole damn building down. That is, until I got a call from HR telling me to come to their office because they needed to discuss an incident that happened.
No!
Oh, no.
Scared for my job, I had tears in my eyes and was shaking all over. I made my way down to HR. As I got closer to the office, I could hear hysterical laughter.
They're trolling her. She thinks she's going to get fired, and they're just straight up trolling her.
And when I went in, I could see all of HR huddling in a circle by a computer watching the whole on CCTV footage. I had forgotten that there were cameras all over the building.
Oh, no. This is the episode of The Office where Michael falls in the koi pond.
Totally. Anyways, I didn't lose my job, and instead I was told by one of the HR people that I made their whole year.
And now we're married.
And they'd never seen something so funny before. I hope this made your day as you guys have always made mine.
Sure did.
Oh my, I'm fucking crying. The image
the HR
of
huddling. And laughing.
In a circle laughing at the CCT.
And the iced coffee.
And I could so imagine that feeling of like, oh, I'm going to get fired. And being so afraid as you walk toward HR and hear the fucking cackling. Oh my God. That is so good.
Okay.
I love that.
All right, this next one is like such a classic for anyone who has had to share an office fridge and has a food pilferer amongst their colleagues or even bosses. So enjoy.
New one, breaking the theme, but also again, drunk, can't remember.
Love it.
Hey, ladies, I thoroughly enjoyed the GAC this week, and the new Coven Confession segment is amazing. Being 50, I have a lot of confessions. Life well lived, am I right? Yes. But this one is perfect for you gals. I spent several years working for an orthopedic surgeon's office. Two of the doctors were wonderful men who treated me and the rest of the nursing staff very well. One was a raging misogynist, close talker who lacked common decency as well as boundaries.
Ugh.
He would pound on the bathroom door if he needed to speak with one of us and we were using the facilities.
What the fuck? Fuck that guy.
He interrupted phone calls and conversations and ate any damn thing he wanted to out of the break room fridge, regardless of name tags.
I labeled that shit. It is mine.
That's the most offensive thing that this man has done.
Arrest this man.
Yeah.
Mm. Our hospital served key lime pie on a weekly basis, and he loved key lime pie.
I mean, same.
It should be noted that doctors ate for free, but everyone else had to buy their food and eat it hastily whenever we could. So he could have gotten his own free goddamn key lime pie.
Rat bastard.
But he stole it from someone who paid for it.
That's fucking bullshit. I hate this motherfucker. I hope somebody takes a shit in his key lime pie or a piss or something. Which I could get away with because I am eating so much matcha right now that my shit is bright green. Okay. The other day I was at a party and I had to go poop and I snuck away to poop and I came back like shocked and people are like, what's wrong? And I had taken a shit. It was gorgeous, glorious, like perfect, one big beautiful log. Like this was textbook gorgeous poop. But you could see exactly which half was full of matcha. One half was bright green and the other half was completely brown. And there was a perfect line between the green half and the brown half. Yes.
It was a Venus shit.
It was incredible.
Why didn't you take a photograph?
Because I was at a party with like half people I knew really, really well and half people that are kind of newer friends. Half matcha, half brown.
Yeah. Yep.
So I really wanted to take a photo, but I was like, I don't think I can do that in this environment. Yeah.
And then the next day, my poop is just entirely the matcha green. It's been an amazing journey, y'all. It's been a journey.
Okay. All right. Back to this doctor, this fucker.
I'm inspired. I could listen to you talk about your green shit all day long.
It's incredible.
It's remarkable. Okay. One fine day, I was especially perturbed at him for reducing our biller to tears by commenting, quote, "You've gained a lot of weight in the last months. You're too old to be pregnant. What are you doing?"
What?
I cannot.
Unfortunately, Dr. Asshat in this incident fell on. Unfortunately for Dr. Asshat, this incident fell on Key Lime Pie Day. I bought my piece of pie, added some extra special meringue, assisted by a fortuitous head cold. Put my name on the tasty treat and went about my day. I'll be damned if that fucker didn't walk into my cubby, interrupt a call I was on with a patient, and close talk at me with a mouthful of his phlegmy concoction as he's eating it.
No.
Ew. I hate him.
This might be considered extreme, but I don't have any diseases, well, aside from the head cold, and I didn't spit on his pie, did I?
It was my pie.
Yeah, she didn't spit on his pie at all. She didn't do anything to his pie. She coughed on her own pie.
She spat on her own pie.
Spat on her own pie.
He ate her pie.
Yep.
To her face.
Yep.
Yep. So, love you ladies. Keep me laughing through the worst life can throw at me. Regards, Nurse N.
Ugh.
I can't believe this guy had the gall to eat the pie in her cubicle.
Yep.
All right. Next up, we have a very short confession. Also, I'm not going to say universal confession because I can't speak for everyone, but the added frisson of sex on your boss's desk is pretty classic, I think. A pretty universal experience. I have not had sex on a boss's desk, but I haven't had that many bosses, to be fair. And all I'm going to say is that there may or may not have been sex under a partner's boss's desk at some point. And I apologize to the night cleaning crew.
Okay, next one. Very short. Shorty but goody. Quote, "The worst thing I've ever done is I had sex on my boss's desk while he was gone and a regional vice president of our company was an office away."
No.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, my God. I love that.
That's some 50 Shades shit.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm so proud of this person.
I love it. That's hot.
I've never had sex at work. Well, technically now I work from home, so I have sex at work all the time. But I've never had sex at work while working outside of my home.
I have never had sex at my place of work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have had sex at my partner's place of work.
Ditto.
I think I've done that, but not at my place of work.
Right. Not at my current partner's place of work, just to be absolutely fucking clear, because he works with kids. Yeah. That never happened.
Yeah. Nope.
Never That's, happened, never nope. will happen. Okay.
Nice job.
No. This next one is burned into my memory. I love it so much. We have a Starbucks affair, unbeknownst to one party affair, and we've got an age gap, but I would say that the younger partner definitely takes back the reins and takes back a lot of the power in this story. When she asks to see the divorce papers for proof, you know, if he says he's leaving her, he's never going to leave her unless you ask to see the divorce papers and maybe keep them. But did she keep it? This one relates to the random photo that you asked about.
Okay, good.
That I'm glad we're going to clear something up. Just for our eyes and will not be on the blog.
Sure. Oh, right.
No, it won't.
No, it won't.
Okay. Quote, "I worked at Starbucks from the ages of 16 to 20 years old.
At 19, I had moved out of my mom's house and into an apartment with a narcissistic, verbally and physically abusive boyfriend who was 28 at the time. They're 19.
Ooh.
And swung wildly between overly rough sex and not touching me for months on end.
Oh, that's healthy.
That doesn't sound great.
Mm-mm. It messed me up pretty bad emotionally, so I was constantly starved for positive attention in a very desperate and not cute way.
Oh, no.
Mm. I love the self-awareness that this person has now,
not
looking back.
Way.
Eventually, this manifested into me accepting the flirtatious attempts from a coworker who was 34 and married with two children.
Babe.
Mm. You know, they're making 19-year-old decisions.
Yeah.
And being subjected to, you know, psychological and physical violence from men. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm whatever. It is what it is.
So as far as I knew, he was extremely unhappy at home and had married someone because he felt like he had to. Bible Belt, sex before marriage, the South, blah, blah, blah. You get it. Mm-hmm. We had lots of similar interests because he was a very immature man child. And I, they're 19.
Yeah.
But at the time, I found this enchanting and developed a friendship with this creep. Mm. I knew the whole time it was wrong, but I was borderline psycho from constantly being gaslit at home, so I didn't care. Mm-hmm. I thought I was some kind of relief for this poor, tortured soul that married someone he didn't love.
Oh, poor thing.
He made a Spotify love song playlist for me. Rip, Niall Horan's Slow Hands. I'm so old. I don't know who that is.
Slow hands.
Oh, okay. Is that a One Direction brother?
I don't know. No.
Are they brothers?
I don't think so.
Okay, I'm nailing it.
One Direction kids are not brothers, but the Jonas Brothers are indeed brothers.
I was picturing Jonas Brothers when you said One Direction. I was right there with you.
And this is neither.
No.
Oh, my God. I love you both so much.
Whatever. Whatever. This person can never listen to that song again, and I've maybe never heard it. So
is that the one with the little wizard boy?
We're your cool aunts.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Let me tell you about Neil Diamond.
Oh. Yeah.
Let me tell you.
So this guy would change shifts just to work with me, would make inappropriate comments on my work attire, which, by the way, was like jeans and a gray t-shirt per the dress code.
Fuck off.
And once drove an hour and a half to visit me at my new store after I transferred so that I could promote. I had a serious drinking problem at the time and once drank 2/3 of a 1.75 liter bottle of Bacardi.
Mm-hmm.
Then, that's a big boy.
And then sent him nudes. Amanda, did you write this?
No, but this is really bringing back memories. Yeah. I really connect with this common confession.
Yeah.
The similarities are eerie.
You never worked at Starbucks, but otherwise...
No. Wow. No, I did not. But lots to unpack here.
I should probably be dead after that incident, but alas, life goes on.
Doesn't it, though?
As Niall Horan maybe saying. I don't know.
Hated it.
This shit continues for 6 months or so, and finally his wife catches on. She goes through his phone, and he had saved all of my nudes from Facebook Messenger.
Yikes.
She found our texts, calls, group me messages. That sounds fake. That sounds made up. Group me sounds like Streamberry from Black Mirror.
It does.
It totally does.
She starts going through all his other stuff, trying to find out if he'd been banging me or just heavily flirting, and finds the notebook. That day that he'd driven an obscene amount of time to come see me at my new store, he'd been sitting in the cafe writing.
Wow. How beautiful.
Wow, poetry.
He's so poetic.
I never knew what was in there until she found it. Apparently, he'd written pages upon pages in a notebook that he kept in his car about how much he was in love with me.
Ish.
The worst part? When his wife found it, she thought, at first, that it was about her.
Oh, no.
His wife.
She didn't figure out that he was writing about someone else until she was three pages in.
A 19-year-old girl, too.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So she messaged me on Facebook calling me a whore, which fair, and asked how long I'd been fucking her husband. I actually hadn't slept with him, but she didn't believe me. The next day, she went to the local courthouse and obtained divorce papers, and they were laying on the coffee table, filled out when he got home.
Good for her.
Yeah. In hindsight, you go, girl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's no satisfying ending to this story as they patched things up and decided to stay together because God brought them together for a reason.
Oh, God.
I feel bad for this writer, though. You know? I mean,
I feel bad for all of these people.
All of these people, except for the guy, because he's a fucking loser. But, like, this girl wasn't just a teenage idiot.
Yeah.
She didn't fucking know what was going on. Yeah. And he definitely had power over her.
Mm-hmm.
And he fucked her over and certainly fucked over his wife.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And they had kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. This is on him.
Before he blocked me on all social media, I, like a crazy person, asked if I could borrow the divorce papers to see what they were like.
Oh, my God. That sounds like Lucy. That is such a Lucy.
I've never seen them before.
Can I keep them?
I just want to make a copy. I
just want to make a really quick copy.
For my cabinet.
For my cabinet. Can I have your divorce
papers?
That
big of a deal.
For my boyfriend box.
For my boyfriend.
Yeah.
If you don't have a boyfriend box, you haven't
lived.
You need a boyfriend box.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You absolutely need a boyfriend box, young listeners. Mm-hmm. Start now. You won't regret it.
No, it'll be hilarious in your 30s.
Go back and reconstruct one from your teens if you don't have one.
I think Amanda's in my boyfriend box.
I'm sure I am.
Well, I never gave them back.
Oh my God.
What?
First of all, he agreed.
I still blame him for everything.
Third of all, she never gave them back.
Nope.
That's so fucking weird.
That is so you.
I know.
You absolutely would have kept them.
Well,
he didn't ask for them back. He didn't ask. Literally, unless he asks. Well, he didn't ask for them back.
I've been working on a book for almost 3 years about failed relationships, and these papers are good for research.
Oh, my God.
I'm saving all these beer caps for a collage.
Yep.
Canadian Border Patrol.
I never made it.
They're also a reminder that most of the time, creepy older men are just that and only want you for your young-toned 19-year-old legs and ass.
Yep.
Love you, gals. I attached pictures in the email of him, but it's just for you. In case you can't place him, he looks like Ron Jeremy.
He looks like Harmar Superstar.
He looks like Harmar Superstar, who's also a creep.
Yep.
Or Tidy Tim.
Yes. Why is his Hawaiian shirt unbuttoned beyond the nipples?
Yep.
Hey.
It's so low.
Why is everything?
The lanyard.
And then the duplicate portrait, because he's wearing his badge.
Mm-hmm. It's so meta.
Ugh.
Yeah. Oh.
Loser, loser, loser.
Double loser, whatever.
Triple loser, as if, whatever. Get the picture, duh.
Yep. Okay, this next one is about turning an event that is 100% not a work event into a fucking work event. When someone is working that side hustle life, working on their MLM nail stickers pyramid scheme. Okay? So if somebody offers to throw you an engagement party, you might want to ask if they have any ulterior motives and if those motives, say, involve mermaid nail stickers. Okay? The fucking audacity of this bitch is just really astounding to behold. So enjoy. In the last GAC, you requested stories for pyramid schemes.
Oh,
and
God.
I knew y'all would love this.
Cutco knives.
When my husband's aunt married in, no blood relation.
Uh-oh. Making that real clear right away.
Married in.
Divorced his uncle, she went a little cuckoo bananas.
Mm.
And when I say cuckoo bananas, I mean she went from being a successful massage therapist to moving to North Dakota and getting involved in every single pyramid scheme known to man.
Falling in love with Skrelly.
She rented a physical store space in their tiny town to advertise and sell for each business, quote unquote, she was involved in. Oh, God, that's like next level pyramid scheming, getting a storefront.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We still consider her family. So remember, she married in and now she's divorced out.
No blood relation.
Yeah. We still consider her family and saw her whenever she was in town. However, she became increasingly aggressive about her business advertising tactics, specifically towards me. They always target the women. The men in the family, nobody tries to get them involved.
Well, if you don't support my business, you're not supporting women.
Uh-huh. Soul sisters.
Mm-hmm. God. Oh, God.
Okay. Every time Herbalife. She came to visit, it was something different, from essential oils that would cure your chronic illnesses to weight loss fuel that I'm pretty sure is just crack. You name it, she was peddling it. The worst was nail stickers. I'm not going to name the company because these people terrify me. We hadn't seen her in almost...
It's a mob. It's a mafia.
We hadn't seen her in almost a year when she announced that they were having a family reunion in our hometown and that we should all meet up for dinner. At the time, my husband and I had just gotten engaged, so we happily agreed in our post-engagement glow. Dinner was held at the Golden Corral, which should tell you all you need to know about this weird family dynamic. We quickly realized that something was up with the reunion, however, when we were introduced to individuals who were not family members.
Okay.
I'm sitting there eating when his aunt comes over and asks to see the ring. I happily show it off, and in one swift movement, she grabs my hand, whips out a plastic container filled with these nail stickers, and starts applying one to my ring finger. I protest because we're literally in the middle of dinner, and she vice grips my hand and proceeds to use me as a demonstration for our family and all of the other dinner patrons on how to apply a neon blue mermaid-themed sticker to my nail.
No!
She starts talking about how, quote, I noticed in the engagement pictures that your nails were bare. They would have been so much prettier if you had ordered some of these.
Ooh, if you had just smiled more on your
really
nails.
Icky. It would have been so easy and fast. You could have applied them right before the pictures. See how this blue makes your ring pop?
Bitch, I'm not thinking about that when I'm getting engaged.
Also, bitch, don't tell me my pictures would have been prettier if.
Right? Yeah.
And don't consent.
Co-opt my engagement for your sales pitch?
Mm-hmm.
You're gross. You're cursed.
You're scummy. I asked her to please stop. I couldn't wear nail polish for my job. And she started berating me about how I'm not supporting her business.
Uh-huh.
And that I there can just is. Take it off later.
Women supporting women.
After she finishes one nail, she starts on her sales pitch and offers to apply the rest of the stickers to my nails for a price.
Wait.
She's literally like if you've ever been to Morocco.
Yeah,
or
where they
like
braid the bracelet onto your hand and onto your wrist and then charge you like $10
yes.
for it.
Uh-huh. And you're like trying to get away as
yanking
they like.
Yanking away. Yeah. It's assault.
Uh-huh. The first one was free. The rest, which I also did not want, would cost me. But she would give me a family discount.
Stop.
No blood relation.
I again told her no, and the other strangers at the table started pitching in about the benefits of the nail stickers and starting pulling other samples from their purses.
Oh, so what they're the all fuck? In the cult.
That's when we realized that this woman had invited her fellow, quote, boss babes.
No.
Uh-oh.
To the family reunion dinner. They were treating it like a sale party and were trying to sell to other family members and surrounding tables at the Golden Corral.
Oh, so embarrassing.
I hate everything about that.
I mean, worse things have happened at the Golden Corral, but that's pretty bad.
It's up there.
I'm pretty sure people have been got stabbed here once would go back. Got nailed here
got
once.
Got COVID here once.
Got nailed here once.
that we left shortly after she asked about our wedding colors.
No.
And if I was really satisfied with my job. She's trying to get her to like quit. Oh my God.
My God.
Unfortunately.
Your job that won't let you wear nail polish. You're oppressed.
Unfortunately, we made the difficult decision to not invite her to our wedding. If she was willing to host a fake family reunion to sell her garbage, we did not want to see what she would be capable of at our wedding.
Oh, no. You did the right thing.
Yeah.
100%.
We haven't seen her since, but apparently she just moved to Florida and may now be involved in some insurance fraud. Hashtag growth, I guess.
Wow.
This final one isn't technically a confession, but I did talk about it during a previous GAC episode, and I think I was just, it was new information at the time. I was so excited. I just had to share it with whatever next episode we were recording, and that happened to be a GAC episode. So it's not really a confession, although this person definitely told on themselves so much, including with an FBI undercover informant, that they might as well have confessed. I don't know if anybody remembers the case of the pediatrician, Dr. Stephanie Russell. She is based in my new hometown, Louisville, not Maine, not Normandy, not Paris. She's a pediatrician at the hospital where I gave birth and where our, you know, OBGYN's office is. And we almost had her as a pediatrician, except all of this came out just in time.
So are we ready for the news story?
I don't know. I'm scared.
So as I was compiling these confessions for today's recording, my mom called.
Oh, God.
And she goes, I think it's time that we talk about how you're going to choose your pediatrician. And I was like, Mom, I can't. Not right now. I'm busy, you know, whatever. And
it's
like,
also not time right. for that.
And she goes, oh, I think you have time for this.
Oh, no.
Okay. She sent me this article. This pediatrician woman, Dr. Stephanie Russell, works. She's very highly rated, this pediatrician. She works at the exact office, part of like the hospital clinic where my OBGYN is, where I would have looked for a pediatrician. Okay.
Okay.
Super highly rated, probably the most highly rated pediatrician in her office. 21 years experience. She's covered in network by my insurance. I would have 1,000% tried to get this woman as my pediatrician. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, she was arrested for hiring a hitman to kill her ex-husband.
Oh my God. I want her as my pediatrician.
Yeah, is she out of the running?
Can she not
only
be a doctor?
Only if she does go to jail, only because then, you know, it's tough to practice. But
oh my God, where do we fund her defense?
I guess I'll make a folder for pictures.
Oh God.
It's so incredible, this story.
Oh, no.
So there she is. She was arrested at work. She's in her scrubs.
Yes!
In her, what's it called, photo?
Mm-hmm. Mugshot?
Mugshot. Yes. Okay, so.
Oh, she's sweet.
Why is she holding her hand like that?
I don't know. The person that she tried to hire was an undercover FBI agent, of course.
She's clutching her pearls.
Yeah, she is.
Russell allegedly agreed to pay the undercover agent $7,000 in exchange for murdering her ex-husband.
Okay, idiot. Of course that's a con.
Right.
That's too cheap.
Right? Yeah.
People need to fucking
be less
wake
cheap.
Up. Yeah.
Well, you can't hire a hitman online. I'm sorry, you can't. Unless you're like a techie.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like super in the deep web.
Yeah, it's their 100% undercover FBI agents.
She looks like somebody who would have posted on like Facebook Marketplace in search of.
Yeah, totally.
So ISO, some used cabinets, and someone to murder my husband.
So on May 18th, 2 days ago, police say she placed $3,500 in a Dropbox outside of her medical office in Norton Commons, which is called Kids with a Z Pediatrics. In a Dropbox outside her medical office as half of the payment. And then she was going to pay the other half once the murder was completed.
Oh, my God.
She faces a maximum of 10 years in federal prison. Her ex is
laughing his ass off.
Yeah. Like, what? Like, his name is Ricky Crabtree. He's the father of her two children.
Oh, no.
They've been together a while, but they married in 2018 and divorced in 2020 and have been in an ongoing custody battle since then. Also, what a fucking idiot. You're a literal pediatrician. You think you're going to do poorly in a custody battle?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
You're the mom and a highly rated pediatrician. You had this in the bag.
Yeah. Now you're fucked.
I feel like the most egregious part of this murder for hire plot is kids with a Z.
And this is amazing. In 2013, they were in a local newspaper for their Christmas decorations.
Like the couple? Like the family?
The couple before they had kids. And so I just put that photo on the drive. Unfortunately, you have...
So stupid.
They look really unhappy in this photo.
Oh, my God.
And the Christmas decorations, this is why I would have not chosen her to be my pediatrician.
They're all fake.
Kids with a Z.
I couldn't find a picture of the tree because you have to subscribe to this, like, newspaper to get the more pictures.
Absolutely not.
But her tree was Disney themed.
No.
She's a Disney adult.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Oh, never trust a Disney adult.
No.
Mm-hmm. So, obviously, allegedly, because she has not been convicted of anything yet. So, blanket allegedly. But this pediatrician, Dr. Stephanie Russell in Louisville, allegedly hired a hitman to take out her husband in a particularly bad custody battle. And she has just been charged. She pled not guilty, but there is a lot of evidence piling up against her, including testimony from their former nanny, where she asked if the nanny, quote, knows any really bad people. That's an awkward question to get from your boss. That's all I'm going to say. Just follow this case. It's wild. I will be keeping very close tabs on Dr. Russell's trial. Also, like, if you're hiring a hitman on the internet, you can't get like a cut rate, bargain rate price. You know, like, you have to be willing to shell out a little more than $7,000 to murder your husband. Okay. So if you think it's too good of a deal to be true, it probably is. And you're probably talking to the FBI. Just saying. Okay, well, that was Coven Confessions this month. If you have any confessions and or steamy, hilarious, interesting updates from past confessions that you want to send to us, please do so via the contact page at wineandcrimepodcast.com and do that drop-down Coven Confessions, or you can just email us with Coven Confessions in the subject line. And yeah, we'd love to hear from you all because you're wild. It's great. All right, now let's hear a quick word from our sponsors.
I put a lot of effort and frankly money into my crown, this head of hair that is on my head, okay? So when it comes to my hair, my scalp, and the health of those two beautiful things, finding a product that actually works and is made with clean ingredients always seems like a trade-off. Like, I never, you know, feel that clean or like my, can you know, those fancy natural
moon rock conditioners. You're spending the money on like a really earthy one, but without the effects.
The cleanliness, the smooth hair. But with Vegamore, I get products that are made with clean ingredients and they give me visibly healthy hair and scalp. It's a win-win.
Yeah, with Vegamore, we are able to have visibly thicker, fuller, shinier, longer hair without all the harsh ingredients. So it is that like best of both worlds. You know, it's better for your body. It's better for everything. And you're getting those really good effects too.
Yep.
So they don't have those harsh ingredients, and every cute pink bottle of Vegamore products are 100% cruelty-free and are never formulated with potentially harmful chemicals like parabens, hormones, all that stuff. And you know what? It's winter. It's very dry outside.
It's so dry.
You gotta care for your scalp.
Mm-hmm.
And Vegamore does all that. Keeps my scalp very hydrated.
The serum, it's like being at a spa in your own shower.
Yeah. And I know I always say this, but it really does smell amazing.
So good.
So what's even better is Vegamore's value kits, like the Grow Essentials kit, where you get to try more than one amazing product at a great savings. And when you sign up for a monthly subscription, you save even more. And you never run low on the products that you need to take care of your hair. Because guess what? Gets shipped right to your door.
Yeah, and then you never have to get stuck, like, getting one of those emergency bottles of, like, really bad shampoo and conditioner at the grocery store just because you ran out. Hi, been there.
Gas station shampoo.
No, we've all done it. Say you haven't done it. We've all done
it. We've all done it. So the key is consistency in your routine. No more gas station shampoo for your most beautiful, healthy-looking hair. And that's why we use Vegamore Grow Hair Serum daily, like Amanda mentioned. And our hair and scalp are flourishing. It's not flaky. We're growing some thick hair. I have some front little bald spots going on. Used to, not anymore. That's where I target my Grow Serum.
Yeah, and it has really shown improvement.
It really has. And also, one last thing, fun fact, Vegamore sells one bottle of Grow Serum every 15 seconds on their website. That is how good this stuff is.
Yeah, it's not just us, y'all. Like, listen to the people. So give your hair the power of the little pink bottle with Vegamore. And for a limited time, Wine & Crime listeners get 20% off their first order by going to vegamore.com/gals and using that code GALS at checkout. That's VEGAMOUR.com/gals, code GALS, to save 20% on your first order. VEGAMOUR.com/gals, code GALS, and treat your scalp.
Try it. Okay, welcome back. Moving on. Thank you to our sponsors. And now let's reconvene in the coroner corner. So this first clip of the preferred jobs of serial killers and psychopaths is from GAC 27, which was way, way back in March 2021. So if any of these have been in your job search history, you might want to take a little introspective look. Your top three skilled serial killer occupations are an aircraft machinist or assembler.
Scary.
A shoemaker or repair person.
Oh, bizarre. That freaks me out. Psychopathic shoemaker?
I'm writing that down.
This is worse.
Your next novel.
The third one is worse, an automobile upholsterer.
That, like, makes sense to me, though. I don't find that worse than the shoemaker. There's something about
shoemaker
the shoemaker.
Knows, like, the size and shape of your feet. They know too much.
the automobile upholsterer,
girl,
that's
you've
a handy
never
skill.
Sold foot picks, obviously. Nobody wants my foot picks.
That's accurate. You have many beautiful features and your feet are not one of them.
No. But I do send both of you pictures of my plantar wart.
Yeah, I know.
This is how I know this.
This is where I'm basing my authority on the subject.
Yes.
She's going strong.
God. Damn it.
Corn strong.
Wart Amina.
What? Oh, no. No.
Your beauty is spread by word of mouth.
Wart Amina. Plant targinate.
Oh, my God.
So our top three semi-skilled serial killer occupations are forestry worker or arborist.
Creepy.
Truck driver. Hi, we've been over that. Or a warehouse manager. And then
Daryl Philbin.
Don't disparage Daryl.
No, Daryl's I wouldn't. Daryl is incredible.
Top three unskilled serial killer occupations are a general laborer, such as a mover, a landscaper, whatever, a hotel porter, or a gas station attendant. And then the top three professional or government serial killer occupations are police or security official, shocking to nobody,
military personnel, also shocking to nobody, mm-hmm. and religious official.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So obviously not everyone occupying these jobs is a serial killer, nor are they likely to become one, but there is something about these jobs that is inherently appealing to offenders or that otherwise cultivates the impulses of serial killers in waiting.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we're not saying that, like, these people are more prone to being serial killers. We're saying killers
they're more drawn are more, to these jobs.
Yeah, prone to these jobs. Yeah, exactly.
And causes them to be curiously overrepresented among this rare breed of murderer. Joseph DeAngelo, the alleged Golden State Killer, who, like,
he's been
fucking
convicted
is
now,
the
so.
Golden State Killer.
Yeah, so this is an old thing because he's...
It's not old. It's actually only from March. Oh. We're in March. Whatever.
Weird.
Days ago.
This was published by the neuroscience thing like a week ago, but I don't know when it was published by the original article.
Mm-hmm.
Must have been at least a year ago. Anyway, DeAngelo, the Golden State Killer, for instance, actually held down three of these jobs over the course of his lifetime, which were police officer, military personnel, because he was previously in the U.S. Navy, and peripherally truck driver, although his post-police career, because he was fired in 1979 for shoplifting, was spent mostly as a mechanic for a fleet of grocery store freezer trucks.
So he was a mechanic and a truck driver. He was ticking off all of
and
these boxes.
And a cop and a military person.
I know. Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
he also loved to tend his little garden.
Ew.
And DBK was like, I mean, he wasn't one of the things on this list, but I feel like very similar in
BTK?
Like a. BTK? Yeah. And like a, he was like.
Yeah, he was like a super family man. He had like a, actually, we'll get to him. We'll get to
Dennis Rader.
I feel
like he's creepy enough to be a shoemaker.
I think there is a mention of Dennis Rader.
He was like an electrician, kind of.
Yeah, we'll get to him, I think.
He worked for like the energy company.
But this gets like more convoluted because as we go through the 20th century, our jobs, the whole format of our jobs are changing as technology, like, becomes more ubiquitous. So a closer look at these occupations reveals a bygone era in terms of available jobs, occupations that, while once common and accessible to killers in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s, are now largely obsolete. The job market is changing, and with that, so is the disturbing but legitimate nexus between murder and labor. The shift toward a service-based, tech-driven, and typically contractual economy, what is often called, quote-unquote, precarious work, which sounds great for, like, our generation, right?
Yeah, we're very familiar
with precarious work.
It's all precarious, Dad.
Well, if you don't realize that this, what you're listening to right now, is held together with, like, duct tape
anything
and
more
dental
than shoestrings, twine.
Let me tell you.
Yeah. Okay, so the shift towards a service space, whatever, along with the disappearance of once traditional career paths, will obviously have profound effects not only on the jobs held by offenders, but also how they acquire their victims. So serial killers once used the guise of their employment to stalk and acquire specific victims or types of victims. But new research suggests that leisure activities like music, including online interactions, may be the new avenue through which serial killers troll for their victims. So something that I cut out of this article just because I didn't quite understand it, but I will mention it. There was a influx in the, I think like the 70s, 80s, 90s in Nashville of like modern country music. So there were all of these new country bars that were opening up. Mm-hmm. And that's where like several serial killers started hunting for their victims. It's just based on like kind of pop culture shifts in a lot of ways.
Instead of like the bar on the corner where everybody knows everybody. So you couldn't really like get away with like being under the radar to like prey on victims. New bar where there's always like different people around and you're kind of anonymous.
Yeah, it kind of boils down to just like societal shifts, really. Mm-hmm. It's not about occupation necessarily, but this this article is about occupation, but it also opens the door to not being about using your vocation to either commit crimes or target victims or get away with those crimes. But it's just like a change in your in overall lifestyle and like where potential victims are attracted to, well, such as country music bars.
Well, I could see that too. Like, think about it in terms of like, if you have a job that involves interacting with customers, say like a BTK, you know, going to people's houses to like service whatever.
Whoa.
If you're creepy, like if you're a serial killer,
which
like,
I am,
part of that, you're going to be creepy at times.
Love.
People are able to then like report that back, and then you can easily be replaced with somebody who like is less creepy to interact with the public. Like you're very disposable and it'll get back to you. It'll have repercussions, whatever. And it's much easier and you have more anonymity to find victims online through like Tinder or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. So like this more like globalization, like bigger companies equals more accountability for those specific individuals. So now they're kind of retreating into the sidelines of like not necessarily using their occupation to find victims or to commit their crimes and like kind of going like down more narrow paths. This next clip is from GAC 48, which was released last December 2022, and it unlocked some new fears in all of us. So this actually happened on March 18th in 2003 in Bonn, Germany. I don't know how recent the article that I took this from was, but it's like a case study about this thing.
Okay.
Okay, Bonn, Germany. A lethal occupational accident occurred at the Bonn Salierweg sewage treatment plant when a technician fell into an overflow sewer and was immediately pulled into a 30 centimeter, which is 11.8 inches in diameter, drain.
Oh, no.
So it's less than a foot in diameter. It is not
You're
a big
sucked
drain.
In.
She was sucked in.
Jeez,
oh,
sorry.
My God.
Rescue efforts were initiated immediately, but had to be terminated due to gas warning. However, when rescue teams continued the search, the body remained undiscoverable.
Oh.
Wait, like they died right like instantly?
Oh, she's dead. And they
she's
couldn't
probably like liquefied.
They couldn't. Well, we'll get to what happened to her.
Oh,
they found her after 2 days.
This poor woman.
So 48 hours later, the cadaver was found in an adjacent digester tank after being transported between the overflow sewer and the digester tank through a 120 meter pipeline. Which is almost 400 feet, with several 90-degree bendings and branch connections.
Oh. No, 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 no. I do not want to get sucked into a drain. No, 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 no.
Well, you don't really have a job where that's likely, although you never know. It could be a now and then situation.
Oh,
you could just be walking down the street and then something happens and you have to like save your friend or whatever from the drain and then
cool,
the rain kicks up and then
cool.
It could be a Charlie and the Chocolate Factory situation when the boy gets sucked into the chocolate river.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. Any of those great things. Thank you.
And actually just so we're clear, this is a sewage plant, so this is poop. This is poop water.
Oh, that was not unclear to me. Thank you.
Yep. I just want to make sure you know.
Cool.
The cadaver showed marked signs of advanced decomposition caused by anaerobic microorganisms in the 98.6 degree Fahrenheit biomass environment, in addition to massive trauma.
Well, and isn't like a lot of that specifically engineered to break down?
Yeah. Actually, I'll get to it right now.
Yeah. Okay.
So basically the plant was refurbished like the week before. So they had to fill it with 98 degree water and what this article refers to as biomass, which is broken down into sludge slurry with a very specific pH balance and specific amounts of organic acids, CO2 and CH4.
to start up the decomposition process.
Goodbye.
In order to monitor the startup, technicians had performed several controls of the biomass. Due to safety prescriptions, the tower platform of the digester tank was only allowed to be entered by two people equipped with gas warning devices that warned them against methane and CO2 levels.
So is that why it took like several days for the remains to be found?
I'm going to walk you through everything.
Okay. Oh, God.
Okay. So at about 1 p.m., a 42-year-old female and a male technician entered the platform to check the current sludge slurry composition and biomass temperature. When the male technician looked into the tank through an inspection window, his colleague presumably wanted to draw a sludge slurry sample for analysis from an overflow sewer. For this reason, she had used a small bucket fastened onto a rope, which she had wrapped around her right wrist.
No.
The male technician later reported that he heard a scream, and as he turned around, he saw the legs of his colleague disappear into the overflow sewer.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
That image is so scary.
Oh, my God.
I have photos that I will put on the blog and photos that I'm not going to put on the blog.
Oh, but God, I forgot about your autopsy.
Well, just go to my folder on the drive because the autopsy ones.
This is that. Lachelle, this is that question. Yeah.
The autopsy photos are in a different folder labeled topsies, so just don't click on that if you don't want to see it yet.
Slurry sludge foam is prominent.
Yeah.
The pipes, Danny boy.
I know, yeah. I'm still looking at the pipes.
So you can see the hole where she got sucked down, and you can also see where
she... small. Was she a small person, or was it just the sheer force of it?
It was the force of it.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Okay, I have more to go. The female technician had put down the bucket into the sewer to take a biomass sample and had subsequently been pulled into the sludge slurry pouring out of a big pipe into the sewers. The bucket had been swept along with the biomass pouring out of the overflow pipe, pulling the rope and technician respectively into the sewer. As the male technician had reported, he had seen the woman's legs disappearing into the sewer, so the possibility could be ruled out that she had climbed down into the sewer to take the sample and subsequently had lost consciousness due to gas and fell. So they because of the fact that she screamed and he saw her legs go down, they knew how she got sucked in.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
The male technician immediately climbed down a few steps in the sewer, but he could not find the body in the foamy and turbid wastewater as the foam layer was approximately 1.5 feet high. Moreover, his gas warning device alarm was going off, and so he had to cancel the rescue attempt and leave the sewer. Fire, rescue, and emergency medical teams were called to the scene immediately, but the body could not be recovered after the wastewater had been drained from the overflow sewer. It was found to be empty, so they were like, oh, well, we drained it and she's not here, so she must have gotten sucked down into this less than a foot in diameter pipe at the bottom of the sewer
fucking
into
God.
The sewage plant pipeline system connecting the tanks and the pools.
This
poor woman.
So horrific.
Oh, my God.
It was quick, people. It was quick.
Please, I hope so.
Due to the fact that the major digester tank tower had been started up again, it was initially not clear which valves of the pipeline system had been open at the time of the accident, additionally complicating a precise search for the missing body. So she's somewhere in the pipe system that's like fucking 400 feet long.
Nope.
At that point, criminal investigators contacted the Department of Legal Medicine at the University of Bonn to get answers to the question about the state of decomposition in the sludge slurry environment at temperatures about 37 to 39 degrees Celsius, which is almost 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm. Just the worst conditions imaginable. Insanely.
It's intentionally decomposition-friendly environment.
Right, for breaking down large sewage
matter. But I just mean even trying to recover the remains. It's like, what kind of divers,
That's what they were trying to figure out. Like, what are we looking at? You'd
have to dismantle the whole fucking thing.
Yeah. And like, could she be broken down enough to get to the other side? Or is she going to be stuck in there somewhere? Are we looking for skeletal remains? Are we looking for what?
So horrific for her, for her family, for her co-workers.
Yeah, it's really horrific. Moving on into the obituary area is a clip from GAC 56, which was released this past August of 2023, with a professional obituary writer giving us a few tips, because you never know when you're going to have to write an obituary. I have a girthy obituary area for us this month. It's a three-parter.
Okay. Oh my God, okay.
So this first part is brought to us by Kate F., who works as a grief services coordinator for a local hospice, and she says it's the best job she's ever had.
Okay.
And she also teaches workshops on how to write a good obituary.
Nice.
So here are some tips from Kate.
Okay.
So here we go. When writing your own obituary or helping a loved one write theirs, it's important to focus on a few key things. So number one, what is the purpose of the obituary? Is it to be part of the historical record, to raise awareness for a cause? Maybe they died of like some weird, rare disease.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To inspire others to change their local communities the way the deceased did, or to thank loved ones, or to honor their memory, or any combination of the above.
Okay.
Obituaries can be so much more than just a biographical sketch. I've learned that with older generations, they find having that family tree to be vital, and they always want to include names and relationships.
That is very, very useful for genealogists down the line, mm-hmm. I will say. If you want to be a part of the historical record, obits are really important.
The second half of the sentence reads, which can certainly help with later genealogy research. I will say.
I must say.
Since no one else is saying it.
Yep.
I will
It
add.
Must be noted.
That's fucking funny.
Gather names ahead of time if possible. If you or your loved one died of a, like I said, a rare or maybe not so rare disease and you want the world to work harder to help people with the same affliction, tell them that. Mm. It is incredible to me the amount of civic work many older adults in my local community have done. Many people will say not to make a fuss after they're dead, but newsflash, all that stuff that happens after you're dead is for the living to help with their grief process. So let people make a fucking fuss. Number two, ask good questions. Writing an obituary can be a great conversation starter.
If people have a fucking sense of humor about it.
Right.
Get alive. Okay.
Get alive.
Grow up. I really love questions such as what's your superpower? What's something people are always surprised to learn about you? If you weren't at work, where could you be found most days? Or something as basic as, when people remember you, which three words do you want to come to mind? You may have never known that someone felt their superpower was always remembering when family members' birthdays were, Blortney, despite never writing them down.
Yeah, she's it's amazing.
Yeah, she's incredible
she's
with that.
Crazy. The superpower one does get tricky if someone says baking was their superpower when others would disagree.
Ooh, yeah.
I love the
awkward.
I love the surprising question because, okay, I feel targeted in this.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know that every time you said you grew up as a 6-year-old being ferried from Minnesota to Iowa with a family friend who was a truck driver.
Wait, what?
Are you joking?
That's what she wrote it for me. So it's about me.
Oh, okay. I was like,
oh my God. I thought you had
I just got really scared.
Has this happened to more than one person?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was like, you have to meet this person. Okay.
So, you know, every time you mentioned that, people's eyes would get wide. But those trips were fun for you. I was shocked to learn that one of my volunteers at hospice was a published author several times over. And then the where could you be found most days one is more of a conversational way of asking about hobbies. So if they could always be found with a fishing rod in hand, what did they use for bait? What type of fish did they catch? Dig deeper. Yeah, it's the details. You're painting a picture. Number three, remember, it's your story, as in the subject of the obit.
An obit doesn't have to be written in third person. You can write it in the first person. It's a great place to remind the world of what and who were important to you. This means you get to include all the family members, even the pets. Please include the pets.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
If you don't want that first marriage acknowledged, then don't include it.
Great advice. Mm-hmm.
You can swear in it. Mildly may be best. Yeah, right. I'm ripping so
I'm
many F-bombs.
I'm gonna fucking go off.
And another thing.
And another fucking thing. Goodbye,
it must
cruel world.
Be said.
It must be said. I'm gonna write my own obit and just use it to tear everyone the fuck apart from beyond the grave. And another thing.
Oh my God. You can share your famous meatball recipe you've always said you'd take to the grave, but if you want, you can even continue to leave just one ingredient out so they'll never taste quite as good. Love it.
Oh, that's petty. I love that.
You can write it in the way that you spoke to people. You can work to make people laugh while reading it. You also get to select the picture that will run alongside the obit. So crucial.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Helen definitely picked her photo. Mm-hmm. Young, hot Helen.
My mom's
not old Helen.
Favorite photo of her on her obituary wall on by the back desk. Mm-hmm.
Is it the clown lady?
Clown lady.
God damn it!
And yep. That was the clown lady. And then there was another one where it's this person that just looks so solemn. It's just like the most plain picture
God, yes.
of a neutral faced person, and it said like so and so.
Picture
here in her
favorite
photo of herself.
It's got the photo looks like she's going terrible.
Yeah. It's neutral edging towards sour face.
It's so fucking funny. It's her favorite photo of herself. Holy shit.
Okay, this says,
amazing.
I have a coworker who is so perturbed by families that run high school graduation pictures with obits for octogenarians. But if that's,
that's
your preference,
Ellen
then
did.
Go for it.
That's what Ellen did.
So, I kind of get it.
It's not her high school graduation photo, but it is a photo from when she was like maybe 25, 30 years old.
Yeah, she's like, look how hot I used to be.
Exactly.
When Zach's grandma goes, she's 1,000% going to put up a photo of her just being an absolute smoke show at like 26.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I would. Are you kidding? Mm-hmm.
I think this just means specifically like a high school grad, like, oh, that's the moment you peaked.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Mm-hmm. I am all for an older photo of like you in your prime, mm-hmm.
yeah.
looking hot. Mm-hmm. Doesn't always have to be a picture of an old you like the week before you died.
Yeah,
I'm not doing that.
No.
Yeah,
that's how you want people to remember you. Like no,
for all of eternity.
If someone dies like prematurely, like in their like in their middle age, we should have like an aged photo. Progressive photo.
God.
Okay, number four. Anyone regardless of age can write their own obituary. We don't recommend this as an activity for children, but I remember writing my first one at an academic summer camp, Kenyon, when I was maybe a sophomore in high school. If you're younger and have no reason to suspect an imminent death, it can be helpful to write two. One as if you were to die tomorrow and the other as more aspirational, as if you were to die at 100. Writing your own obit does not mean you'll die soon. You'll be amazed at how often I have to tell people that.
Yeah.
Okay, lastly, number five, do your research. Whoa, I just burped. Not
nice.
Really, because I can't burp. Do your research. Find existing obits that you enjoyed reading. To some, obviously not us, this may seem like a macabre hobby, but it's a fantastic way to learn about people and make the whole subject a bit easier to broach when talking with family. Oh my God, writing my mom's obit is going to be such a fucking blast.
Ooh, the pressure though. But yeah, it'll be really good.
Oh my God.
We should include a line about she loved the brand new song.
Laffy Taffy. No, what's the one?
That fucking
is
fastball. What fucking song is that?
It's called Out of My Head.
Oh my God. When she discovered
Have
that
you guys
20
heard this
years
new song?
After its release.
It came out
22 years
fucking years
ago. She loves it.
She loves it so much. I might need to play it at the wedding.
And it's only like 2.5 minutes long, so she'll play it like 3 times in a row.
3 times in a
row. You have to play it at the wedding.
Yeah. Having a fun one, as in a fun obit, to lead off with allows the focus to shift to a more hypothetical lens at first. At the end of the day, the best obits are the ones that leave you wishing you knew the person in life and have typically been penned by the dead person or a loved one with whom they wrote in conjunction. Mm. Overall, conversations about writing obits are a great opportunity to even mention more aspects of advanced planning, i.e. touring a graveyard to find a plot you like it matters if you like it.
Right.
Or designating a healthcare proxy. Definitely important. Mm-hmm. Having a well-written obit allows for peace of mind at what people will be reading about you after your death. It's also a fantastic way for your family to honor you and let you know how much you meant to them and how they will always remember you before you're dead. This next one is a clip from GAC 34, which was released in October of 2021. And this was probably our most sent in obituary. And spoiler, it's not even written by a human being. The future is here, people. I love this obit. I quote it on the daily.
Amanda sent this to me first, followed by approximately 6,000 other people.
Yeah.
So thank you to everyone who sent this to me. I saw it.
It's so good.
Okay. So this is purported to be an obituary written by a bot. Of course, it's not, but it's hilarious. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's so much to unpack in every sentence.
I love it so much.
Have you seen this, Kenyon?
I saw this. I thought it was real, so I started reading it out loud to my family on our family trip, and then I was really upset that it wasn't real.
No, of course it's not real.
Let's just pretend it's real. Okay, it's more real. Fun that way.
And her picture is so gross, too. She has like 3.5 eyes.
Ugh.
Okay. Brenda Tent retired from living at the age of old, surrounded by family and natural causes.
Mm-hmm. I love that part.
A librarian from birth, Brenda was an avid collector of dust. She had a sweetheart and married her high school. She loved having hobbies and helping her sons to be disadvantaged youths. She had no horses, but thought she did.
Oh, wow. That's almost the same thing.
The church gave her a choir because she sang like a bird and looked like a bird, and Brenda was a bird. She owed us so many poems. The funeral will be held in 1977 at Heaven.
Yep.
In lieu of flowers, send Brenda more life.
Hamburger help her.
Hamburger help her.
It's so stupid. The beginning part really sucks you in. It really sounds like an obit that a bot would have written.
I mean, how do we know for sure it's not real? Because I've seen other
she
stupid
married
shit.
Her high school.
She was a sweetheart and she married her high school.
All of those bot things are not actually written by bots.
They're
I
not
don't think that that's accurate. I think some of them actually are.
Okay. Well, does anyone have a bot?
Show me the bot.
I want to see the bot.
I
want
to get to the bottom of this.
Somebody send us a bot. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that works. I'm picturing an old answering machine.
Yeah, what the fuck is a bot?
It's literally like computer code.
I know. Yeah. And then somebody make this for real, because I really want it.
It's amazing.
Send Brenda more life.
In lieu of flowers.
The funeral will be held in 1977.
a librarian from birth.
Okay.
Anyway.
Losing it. So I had quite a smattering of content this month.
You did. That was all well over done. The place. I'll that never recover from walnut.
Walnut.
I will.
Or the hair.
Never recover from walnut.
The hair or the hair. Walnut are really, they're brain stickers.
This is, you, yep, every month. Okay, cool. Every month. Every month.
All right.
Anyway,
well, thanks for listening.
Tune in next month.
Yeah.
We'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Gossip at the Corpse Cart, presented by Wine and Crime. Our cover art is by Danielle Sylvan. Music by Phil Young and Corey Wendell. Editing by Jonathan Camp. Our production manager is Andrea Gardner. For photos and sources, check out our blog at wineandcrimepodcast.com. You can follow us on all the socials at wineandcrimepod. If you have funny headlines, coven confessions, or obituaries to share, email us at wineandcrimepodcast@gmail.com. Episodes are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple. It is the best way to spread the word. If you'd like to show your support and get access to all sorts of wine-fueled bonus content, visit our Patreon page. Cheers!